Okay, we don't have enough members yet for a forum, or for a quorum, but we're a few minutes late, so I'm going to have Representative Runbeck start presenting her bill, and then we will officially start and move the bill once the rest of the folks get here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do have a delete all amendment. It's actually not substantially different in from the original, but we decided to delete everything. That's the 82 amendment.
Okay, we can start talking about it.
Okay.
If you'd like.
All right. And the Bill 501 addresses issues of arbitration. Many cities are using arbitration to handle their contract negotiations for wages and benefits for their employees. But as we're seeing from some recent decisions, some of these decisions are not really, they're sort of divorced from what's going on in the private sector. And so you've got some increases that, and I can hand, I've got a handout actually that can go out. But a very recent example was the city of Edina, in which they felt that a 3% increase for the police union for 2 years running was really not following the pattern that had been established for the other bargaining units in what their wage decisions had been. So you're seeing that some of these decisions are not taken into account in these times, lack of revenue, reduced property valuations, that's that kind of thing, or even just what's going on in the market. So what we know is that it's in the arbitrator's best interest, you know, for job security to come in with pretty substantial recommendations on wage increases. And what we're saying here in this bill would be that there needs to be some considerations that the arbitrator takes into account and really seriously look at, and then you list here the kinds of things the arbitrator has to take into account as they are you know, presenting their solution and their budget solution to the city. But I do have Laura Kushner with me from League of Minnesota Cities, and she may be able to give a little more background on it for you.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
My name is Laura Kushner. I'm the Human Resources Director with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. I will point out just a couple of things. I think Representative Runbeck did a great job of summarizing what the League's position is on this. It does apply only to essential employees, to police, fire, dispatchers, the folks that are listed in stat 179A in the definition section as essential employees. Basically, those who have a right to binding arbitration in lieu of a right to strike. As Representative Runbeck said, public employers are increasingly feel that arbitrators are ignoring the economic conditions of the city and they're awarding wage increases that are out of line with market conditions. And we would also add that we think arbitrators are second-guessing the city's ability to make financial decisions about what's best for the city and to make sure that they make the cuts where they deem them most appropriate. This bill specifically requires an arbitrator to consider interest, to give substantial weight to the city's evidence regarding economic conditions within the city, and things like its ability to raise revenues, decreases in local government aid, and other revenue declines, and especially the property tax burden on the city's property owners. I'd like to give you just an example. In the city of Brainerd, there was a recent arbitration decision where all of the other city employees had been awarded 0% for 2009, 0% increase, had bargained for that, and the arbitrator awarded 3%, saying that the city did not show where it had to curtail its investment portfolio, nor that it had shown how it had to transfer investments into the general fund to maintain its operations. So the arbitrator was really, I think, exceeding his authority in that decision by trying to make decisions for the city on where they would best make investment decisions and, rather than cuts. And that's really the city administration's job to make those kinds of decisions. In this case, the city of Brainerd had already made substantial budget cuts by freezing equipment purchases, by curtailing services, by freezing wages, by laying off employees, In addition, it showed, it showed that it had low median household income, high unemployment, a high percentage of families living below the poverty line, and high foreclosure rates. So the city of Brainerd did its job to say, look, our city's in tough shape right now, and we can't take a 3% wage increase, but the arbitrator awarded it anyway. It also prohibits an arbitrator from considering the budgetary reserves of a city. And again, I would emphasize that city administrators are paid to make those decisions, and that there are other things in place that will keep a city from going crazy and stockpiling money, the city council for one. And then last point I will make, and then I would be happy to answer any questions. This also prohibits an arbitrator from granting a general increase or external market adjustment greater than that negotiated by another union within the same city for the same contract period. And again, both the Edina decision that Representative Runback referenced and in this Brainerd decision, both of those arbitrators basically ignored the pattern that had been set in the city for 0% wage increases and ordered 3% wage increases in an economic climate where those cities just felt that that was completely out of line with what was going on in the rest of the world, basically. So that is basically our reason for this bill, and I would be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kushner. Just a sec. The committee will come to order. We do have a quorum now. And like to have someone move the minutes. Representative Hancock, you've been here on time. Would you like to move the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from February 17th.
Okay. Representative Hancock moves approval of the minutes of Thursday, February 17th. Is that right? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. And then we will get to your bill. Representative Runback, where is the next stop? Is it the General Register, or do you need to make another stop?
I believe it is the General Register.
Okay, I will move that House File 501 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. And then we will...
Madam Chair, just a question to that. Given that this is a quasi-judicial type of a body that is being instructed, does it not need to visit a civil law committee or one of the or judiciary or something like that? I wonder if staff has a question and have a thought on that.
Do you have a thought on that, Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, I think that is purely a policy decision for the committee. There is not a House rule that would require a re-referral there, so it would be up to the committee.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Chair, I'm sorry, and maybe I could direct a question of on this issue of where the bill goes, Representative Runback. If there is an interest arbitration, is there an appeal process that can be followed?
Representative Runback.
I would be happy to answer that.
Ms. Kushner.
There is only, you have to go to court to appeal an interest arbitration decision or any kind of arbitration decision, and the law states that great deference will be given to the arbitrator and almost no arbitration decisions are overturned.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know that I want to amend the motion to send it to civil law, although, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable just having it make this one committee stop, considering that it does have, I mean, it bears on the legal system, I guess, and how this works. But, you know, I guess if the bill changes more over time and it has more of an impact on the judicial review of these kinds of decisions, I would hope you'd be open to moving it back to one of the committees with jurisdiction over the judiciary.
Representative.
Madam Chair, I'm not opposed to referring it to civil law.
Okay. To me, it seems like if there's going to be an issue later on, we may as well do it now. If you feel strongly,
Madam Chair, I just think it's helpful to go to one more stop. I think it would be better to do this in civil law. So if Representative Runback is okay with that, I think that would be better.
That would be fine with me, Madam Chair. You want to remake the motion?
Okay, I will rescind my motion to place 501 on the General Register, and I will move that House File 501 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to civil law. Okay. I think I think first we have to. Did you want to take questions before we move make the move the move the amendment? You two.
Well, I mean, I do.
Yes, I do. Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you have a question before I move the amendment?
No.
Okay. Well, I will then move the 8-2 amendment, and then I will take questions on that first. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just kind of curious, not so much to the amendment, but when you said 3%, are there anything like steps and lanes that go with that, and what is the actual impact to the city? Is it actually 3%?
Ms. Kushner.
Chair, Representative, it very much depends on the union contract. I believe the ones that I looked at in the, I think in the Brainerd decision, there were actually steps, and those steps were increased by 3%. So I think that was the general impact.
Okay. Representative Hornstein?
No, thanks. I thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask about that private sector piece, wages and benefits, but I realize that's out of the bill now in the delete everything amendment. I guess I just wanted to confirm that that's no longer a criteria.
That's
Representative Rundeck.
And Representative Bornstein, that's correct. Apparently, it became, you know, I'm thinking about how to do that, you know, way too problematic and difficult, apparently. So it's out.
Thank you. I had a concern about it. I appreciate that you took that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any more questions on the 8-2 amendment? Okay. Hearing no further questions, all those in favor of the 82 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say no. Amendment passes to the bill. I think we have Julie Blyle from AFSCME wanted to testify. She could come up at this time. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and your group for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. And the Delete Everything Amendment did strike out the reference to private sector, and I think that is an improvement. But at the same time, I'd like to go on record with opposition. All the bills that we're dealing with right now amend PELRA, the Public Employee Labor Relations Act. And it was interesting because last night on WCCO, I heard former Representative Steve Swiggum, who was elected to the Board of Regents yesterday, indicating that back in 1980 that he voted for the Public Employee Labor Relations Act. And as union members, our members feel that they're under attack no matter which committee they go to. There's an amendment offered, or there's a bill introduced, or there's a bill being heard that goes after PELRA. And PELRA has worked extremely well in Minnesota. By putting in place language, which you have in front of you in the bill here, again, you're prescribing. You're prescribing what, and pointing to the direction, what should be the outcome. And that would be our concern with regard to changing the arbitration process. There's many factors that obviously go into consideration, but as we see it, the arbitration process has worked well. There's times that we are happy with the outcome. There are times that we are not happy with the outcome. And as a general statement, I'd just like to say that public employees have not asked for the Public Employee Labor Relations Act to be amended, but every place we go, someone is trying to make a change. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have a question for either of the witnesses or the author?
Well, Madam Chair, if I can just make a comment. I mean, I you know, the times are probably different than they were in the past, and I think it's becoming clear that we elect elected officials to make these decisions. We need to have the elected officials be the ones in charge in our cities and counties, because that's who the voter can, you know, can appeal to and can talk to and reach. So it's about putting elected officials in charge and giving them a little stronger tool when it comes to the spending issues.
No?
Several questions, Madam Chair. I don't know if other testifiers are coming up.
Others want to testify? Come to the table. Welcome to the committee. If you could please just state your name and who you're with for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Robert Johnson. I represent some 11,000 Teamsters Local 320 members here in the state of Minnesota. And within that local, we have a number of police officers that are statewide, along with correctional officers in local county jail facilities. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this issue. I will echo what Julie Blyle indicated, and that is it seems that every day I wake up and I find a new attack on PELRA, that the system, which has been heralded nationwide as one of the best public employee labor relations acts, all of a sudden has now become this horrible albatross around our necks that we don't support or don't like. Interest arbitration has worked, and it's worked very well. I see no need for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Another witness? Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. And I would also echo the comments that it feels like there's an attack going on here. I would like to offer mainly questions for you to think about. On line 1.18, it says that the arbitrator or panel must give substantial weight to the following issues. And would that be, would that then take away some of the history of the judgments in the past? And is it giving some evidence more weight than others? And should that not be the decision of the arbitrator? In addition, on lines 1.22, that paragraph, it seems odd that, and I'm wondering why it would be that we would be asking the arbitrator to only consider the declines in revenue and not to consider the increases in revenue. So here, again, it appears to be one-sided. Why only the declines? In lines 2.3 to 2.6, we know that certainly, 2.5, the general economic condition of the public employer and the property tax burden. If you look at school employees, we really don't have the ability to levy like other units of government. And we're not saying, we're not here to contest that. But it does put school employees at more of a disadvantage, I believe. And I would ask you to seriously consider efforts like these, because when a union sits down with management, their purpose is to come to agreement, to be creative. And what we're doing here is, I believe, stopping the creative process where we could be trying to collaborate and come to some kind of agreement. As well as another point that needs to be made, that there are times when teachers or secretaries take significant losses in insurance and their copays go up, their out-of-pocket costs go up. So there might be a history that should be taken into consideration and should be continued at the local level versus putting these mandates on interest arbitration. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dennis Flaherty, and I am Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. I represent about 8,500 rank and file officers throughout the state who definitely would be impacted by this legislation. In 1973, I think it was, the legislature gave binding arbitration to essential employees, which are police and fire and other few other classifications of employees. And that really is their only way to resolve disputes with their employer. And it has served Minnesota very well. And you know, police officers and firefighters do not want to strike. And so this has been able to serve their interests, give them an opportunity to appear before a neutral arbitrator who could make decisions when they weren't able to do so with their employer. It's been a level playing field for the most part, and I do believe this bill, which says that if I were representing a group of police officers, we couldn't refer the arbitrator to look at the city's budget reserves. Well, my goodness, why wouldn't we be able to look at the city's budget reserves? And because an employer has settled with clerical employees, for an example, why would we not be able to go before a neutral person and try to justify why we feel we deserve a different award? So I think this is going to have a negative impact on labor relations for essential employees. I think it is going to disrupt the ability to be able to argue cases favorably. And, you know, although I do like one of the things that was taken out in this amendment, but the fact of the matter is it would seem to me that this is not going to be helpful at all for really for any sides. And I don't think that's really what the intent of this bill is, but I do believe that's what the intent of it is going, that's what's going to result. So I, at least for essential employees, I think this is the wrong direction that we're heading. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Richard Kajewski, the Legislative Affairs Director for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. Just a few comments. As Ms. Blyle stated prior to my testimony, PELRA is really what establishes our collective bargaining agreement. And within PELRA and within our contract, it governs what the arbitrator's decision really can be and what those parameters are. This embellishes upon that and takes away our actual collective bargaining agreements that are already in our contracts. It's interesting, I've heard previous testimony talking about the ability to pay within cities or state government for that matter. It is the administration's responsibility to provide testimony on what their ability to pay is or inability to pay is, just as it's the union's responsibility to provide testimony that they do have the ability to pay. It's interesting that the position being taken here is that we'll take that authority away from someone who is a neutral to make that decision and just govern it automatically. And that neutral is trained. They're required to have a certain number of hours of training, and they engage in that practice on a regular basis. They don't just hear one contract in their lifetime and make that decision. And last but not least, I think in line 1.25 on the delete all amendment, this cripples labor unions without exception. This takes away one union's ability to bargain. I don't think cities, and I certainly know the state government, doesn't have the ability or the staffing or the resources to negotiate with all of their labor representatives at one time. And to say that they can't exceed one person's negotiated increase, you have employees in the city making significantly less than managers, for example. We do represent groups of management in cities around the state, and they would be hampered if they negotiated behind city workers. For instance, you may be able to negotiate a salary increase for a worker that's 3%, and then if you negotiate a salary increase for a manager that's 3%, the cost of that contract is going to be significantly more. And so by doing this, I don't think you're given proper consideration for the different job classes and what the actual market adjustment maybe should be for those classes. So with that, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Jo George with the Minnesota Nurses Association. We appreciate the opportunity to testify. And like the other unions before us, we are opposed to this bill as well. We believe it's a substantial departure from PELRA, and we believe that while many arbitrators do informally adopt many of these criteria, we think it will lead to substantial disagreements and litigation over whether the arbiter has adequately followed these criteria. So we prefer that it not be subject to a mandatory requirement. We also believe it would require that employers would appeal the awards under the Act, which would create lengthy court battles on whether or not, again, the criteria was followed. Minnesota Nurses Association represents about 700 nurses in the state workforce who rely on interest arbitration. These are nurses who take care of many of our vulnerable people under the state's control, both in terms of our corrections department and at our regional treatment mental health hospitals, as well as many of our nurses who work in the Department of Health that investigate our nursing home and hospitals. In addition, we do represent public health nurses at, for example, our public hospitals. Hennepin County, for example, we have over 1,000 nurses there. And we believe this is their only way to negotiate a fair contract without the ability to strike. So we would really respect your opposition to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Okay, I think we'll take questions. Representative Winkler, did you have a question or aid?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I actually have a few questions.
Okay.
First question, I guess, is to Representative Runbeck in referring to the delete everything amendment. In line 1.15 and 1.16, it says the arbitrator must give substantial weight to the following issues, and then it says, and evidence presented by a public employer. Two questions for you. First is, what does substantial weight mean in terms of, you know, evidence? I mean, what does that mean? What's the significance of that? And then secondly, why only evidence presented by a public employer rather than presented by the employees?
Representative Runbeck.
Madam Chair, I'll have Laura Kushner respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. Arbitrators, as some of the union folks here have already testified, arbitrators are very experienced in figuring out what substantial means. That's a term that they will be very comfortable figuring out. In general, it's going to mean the preponderance of the evidence or, you know, the majority of the evidence or the majority of the weight, I should say. One of the reasons we put in presented by a public employer is that our cities have felt that in the past arbitrators have not given very much weight to what public employers have put forward as far as testimony with regard to ability to pay. They felt like, in often case, not everyone, many arbitrators do a very, very good job with considering both sides of an argument, but some of them don't. And when they don't, it's often the city's case that gets falls by the wayside. And they're pretty eager to brush aside what the city has presented as far as its ability to pay and to believe that the city is stockpiling money and hiding it from the unions, which, of course, I don't know of any city that does that. So we felt like it was most important that the public employer's representative, the public employer's case, be given substantial weight.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Ms. Kushner, it just seems like this is an exercise in power. You've got majorities in the legislature now that are sympathetic to public employers, and the whole point of having an arbitration is that it's an adversarial process, and you have an arbitrator who is supposed to weigh evidence, who is supposed to apply legal standards to the evidence as they weigh it. And just because every party that doesn't get what they want believes that their evidence wasn't correctly weighed. And I heard nothing in your testimony to suggest today other than the fact that you think that you haven't got the decisions that you deserved in the past and that you want to change that by putting the thumb of the state law down on your side. So if we are to see arbitration as a process for reaching a fair conclusion, how can I square this idea that only the evidence of one side should be given weight and substantial weight, and the for the first time in the statute we actually have the criteria in law for what exactly they're supposed to consider? This just looks like an exercise in not liking some of the outcomes in arbitration, and so rather than changing the process, you go to the legislature and find sympathetic legislators to just basically push your side down so that you will win. How is that not the case here?
Ms. Kushner?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think a couple of things I would say to that. First of all, the public employer is the one who is supposed to be in charge of a city's financial condition and its budget. The public employer is charged with making sure that the city is run appropriately. In the case of the Edina decision, that public employer's right to manage its financial condition was taken away by an arbitrator, and I think that's not an appropriate thing to happen in arbitration. The other thing I would say about that is these are employees who do not have the right to strike. When you have the right to strike, there is a very there's a built-in incentive to make sure that, you know, nobody wants a strike. It's bad for everybody. It's difficult. It's time-consuming. It's, you know, there's a lot of bad things about a strike. When you have interest arbitration and the unions have the right to just go and ask for something, there is no incentive for them not to ask for the moon. They can ask for the moon, and if they get half the moon, they'll be happy. There's a built-in bias towards the union in an interest arbitration situation, we believe, and therefore we think this piece of legislation will carry it a little bit further towards the middle.
Madam Chair, I'd like
Senator Winkler.
To follow through on this. What is the incentive for the employer not to ask for the moon, go to the arbitrator and ask for the moon? I know that the point here is that in labor relations, generally, the strike is the way that the worker has the ultimate power. So the strike is not less than interest arbitration. Interest arbitration is less than the strike. And it seems to me that you have the discipline of a process. Now, if we want to have a discussion about whether the arbitrators are being fair, that's one question. If you want to have a discussion about whether courts should have greater discretion to overturn an arbitrator, that's another discussion. If you want to talk about the fact that you should have that the method of selecting the arbitrator is unfair, that would be another issue. But this doesn't. I mean, the point here is that it's a process for reaching a fair conclusion. You're not going to get a fair conclusion every time. But what is it that the employees have that the employer doesn't have in this adversarial process?
Ms. Kushner.
Madam Chair, Representative, you asked the question about what is the employer's incentive to be fair in this kind of situation, and I would say as a human resources director for many years, I have plenty of incentive to be fair to our employees. For one thing, if I'm not fair, they will leave and go seek other employment. I have a strong incentive to keep morale up and to keep people happy. There's a lot of reasons for an employer not to treat their employees badly that is already built into the system. And I think that bad employers do lose their employees. And so I think there's a lot of incentives for the employer to treat employees fairly in an interest arbitration.
Senator Winkler.
Madam Chair, Ms. Kushner, what you just said, I mean, the implication of what you just said is that unions have no reason to be fair or reasonable, and employers are the only ones who have an interest in being fair and reasonable. What incentive do employees have to drive up wages and benefits so far that they trigger layoffs or they make it impossible to run the city? I mean, you're suggesting by your answer that somehow the city is inherently nicer to the employees than the employees are respectful of the employer.
Ms. Kushner. Representative Runbeck.
Perhaps I can just, I'd like to sort of throw in here the experience in my own city, in which now for, I think it's 3 years, maybe just 2 years, that there have been freezes on salaries for all but the union employees. And so you have, in a lot of cities, a growing disparity. And if you talk about morality, you've got one group that is appearing to be protected, and the rest of the folks are having to eat it in their own budget, in their own salaries. So, it's becoming, unique situation. We don't have the revenues that we used to. And so it's impossible for an employer to treat everybody fairly. And so it's, by default, practically, becoming very unfair, one group to another.
Representative Winkler, would it be okay if you could ask this final question, and then if you still have more, put you at the bottom of the list?
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, you just said union versus non-union. And this bill doesn't distinguish between those kind of employees. And if you wanted to bring forward a bill that gave the cities more authority to negotiate with unions, I guess that would be great. But as far as I'm aware, there's nothing that prevents your city from doing, from you know, forcing a strike, if necessary, to get to a zero and zero salary and wage, I mean, sorry, salary and benefit increase. If your city chooses not to exercise that authority and force a strike or any other kind of action, that's their decision. But what we're talking about here is changing the rules for arbitration. And rather than having a fair process, and you haven't alleged that the process is unfair, what you've alleged is you don't like the outcome. And not everybody always likes the outcome, but that doesn't mean that you get to go in and put in statute that you always get to win, unless it's just a raw exercise of political power.
Want to comment to that? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, these criteria in the bill, I'm looking at the delete everything amendment on line 1.15, 1.17, decreases in local government aid, economic condition of the city. Are these somehow now excluded?
Ms. Kushner?
Madam Chair, Representative, are you asking whether or not the decreases are excluded from consideration by an arbitrator?
Correct.
No, they certainly can, under current law, consider those. Cities just don't feel that they often do.
Well, Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, okay, I guess this is a variant of what Representative Winkler was saying then. If there's no exclusionary rule right now, if cities can, and I trust do, already submit this information, then it really does sound like this is a complaint about the outcome. If cities already do what's on line 1.17 and they submit evidence to an arbitrator of decreases in local government aid and they plead poverty, or on line 1.21, they already do and can submit evidence of the economic condition of the city, and if, as you seem to be implying, the result has not been what you want, then I guess I'm more convinced than I was just a minute ago that this is just about dissatisfaction with the results and putting the thumb on the scale. I mean, when you say substantial weight, you're all but saying it's kind of a done deal. The I guess next issue I have is with lines 1.25 through 1.27. As I read it, there may be some perverse incentives here. If you're saying that an arbitrator must not grant a general increase more than was already voluntarily negotiated by another exclusive representative, it seems to me that this has the great potential to pit bargaining unit against bargaining unit. You might have the police officers, for example, that got a 2% increase or something, and then the nurses can't get more than 2%. So that means either there will be a race to the arbitrator or a race to conclude a labor agreement by the first one in the door to make sure that they get theirs and others are bound or hemmed in by what they get, or you'll have kind of civil war between the nurses and the police officers, and the police officers will say, don't dare go above 2% because then we can't get 2.1, and you're going to pit labor against labor and worker against worker. Am I misreading that? Is that not a logical outcome of this?
Ms. Kushner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't think that's our intent to pit the unions against each other. Our intent is for all the unions to play fair, and to when all the other unions in a city have agreed to share the pain of difficult market conditions and difficult economic conditions, and some unions choose not to share that pain and choose to go to interest arbitration because they have the right to do that. That makes it very difficult, as Representative Runbeck said, for the city to treat its employees fairly across the board. So it's, you know, we're trying to make sure that there is equity across the board, that all the employee groups are treated as similarly as we can.
Well, I guess
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just say as a comment that, you know, right now all of us justifiably are dealing with times of austerity, and we're phrasing things in a lot of the bills we've seen in terms of decreases in aid and the economic condition of the city. But I have the sneaking suspicion that someday, and it will happen, doesn't seem like it will now, but it will, when we're flush again and our cities are flush, we won't be hearing some of the same people who are now advocating these kinds of approaches saying that workers should get an increase because everyone's doing well. I have that sneaking suspicion, but I guess only time will tell.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Kushner, my interpretation of why you're putting more weight on this goes back to
you know, when I've listened to audits of cities, audits of schools, been on the school board, there's a difference between revenue streams and reserves, especially now with the increase of gas costs, now that the rotation of the weather has changed back to cooler winters. Cities have more costs that they average above what maybe they budgeted, and they need those reserves, and it's not prudent to use one-time reserve funds for a ongoing contract. Is I'm trying to understand, is the intent to say, hey, if you've got a revenue stream, only use the revenue stream, and that there's a reason for reserves, and that's for emergencies, not general ongoing expenses?
Ms. Kushner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would generally agree with what you just said. I think cities are in the best position to know what's, what kind of reserves they need for various things that they have coming up. As you said, snow plowing, they need to plan for that. They need to plan for equipment. The other thing that has occurred in recent years is one of the ways cities have balanced their budgets is by putting off equipment purchases and other things that they need to do. And therefore, they need those reserves because that won't last forever. They will eventually have to make those. So the people in the best position to understand the city's budget reserves are the city administrators and the city council. And we just would like the arbitrators to give more credibility to those folks that are in charge of those decisions.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I was a little disturbed by some of the things I've heard in some of your the answers. And I guess, I don't know if this is a question or more of a statement, but I keep hearing the cities know best. We know best. This kind of sounds to me like you want the power of a king or a power of somebody that I own this person and I can tell them what to do. I mean, this is what is coming off to me. We know better than you. You know, I'm the daddy. I know better than you. You got to do what I want. It's like you're talking to the employees as little children, taking away their rights to like the interest arbitration. If we can't come to an agreement, you keep saying they have the right to strike and they can go on strike, but the police officers, the essential employees, don't have that right. It just disturbs me that this going in the direction similar to what's happening in our neighboring state, where we're just going to hand stuff down to, and you have to accept this. And if you don't like it, you can leave. That's what I'm hearing here in this, and what your answers are. So I guess this is more of a statement I'm disturbed by this, and I can't support this bill. And I think as it moves forward, this is just the wrong way for us to go. Having worked in as a union representative for many years, the right to strike isn't that big of a right. I mean, and a lot of times employers, both public and private, will move their employees and make such outrageous demands to try and force them to go on strike so they can replace them. All we have to do is look at different unions where that's happened, where they've replaced workers and brought in replacement workers to get rid of people and get rid of unions. This is just a very bad precedent to be setting for our state, and I think this is a bad bill.
Senator Bornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my friend from Brooklyn Park. Now I'm sounding like Representative Biscuits here, but no, my colleague,
good friend,
Brooklyn Park, I think said pretty much what I wanted to say, and that is, I think we need to be clear about what's going on here. I think this is yet another in a series of initiatives we've had that have I think are meant to erode the our current labor relations system when it comes to public employees, and I think Representative Nelson said it very well. I mean, I think this is very much what is going on in Wisconsin, and it's disturbing to see that it's going on here, and I'm concerned about it. I'm voting no on this bill, and I hope that we can address any issues in a fair and equitable way, and I don't think this bill does that. So I would encourage colleagues to vote no.
Representative Winkler, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, I guess I just have maybe try to go about this another time, and Ms. Kushner, I think, can probably best answer it. I just wonder, what about the current statute is unfair? You said that you just want to have, this should just be fair play, and I'm wondering, what what do we have in the current statute that is unfair? And if I'll give you a chance to answer two questions, I guess. But if the statute itself is fair and the awards are unfair or the decisions are unfair, is there something about the arbitrators and how they're selected that is unfair between the parties? Because it seems to me the point of this is to establish a process, not to choose an outcome. So can you identify things in the statute or in the arbitrators themselves that are unfair to cities?
Ms. Kushner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think there are, I think that what our cities would say is that the statute, while it alludes to the arbitrator being required to consider the statutory rights and obligations of public employers to efficiently manage and conduct their operations, that in practice that hasn't been happening. Now, you know, you were saying that we have a problem with the arbitrators in the process, and I suspect we have some could have some very good conversations about how to make that better. However, I think our goal is to strengthen, is to send a message to the arbitrators that they have to take that obligation seriously, that they couldn't, that they should be understanding that cities are facing very difficult economic times, as are all private employers, and that just because, you know, you can raise taxes doesn't mean you should, basically, maybe is a good way to say it.
Senator Winkler.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I just, you know, I don't hear an answer as to what about this is fair or unfair. This, all this bill seems to do is to say that the employer always wins, and I have to agree with my colleagues that it's not the right decision for this committee moving forward.
Okay, do we have any other discussion? Questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Request a roll call.
Representative Nelson requests a roll call. There will be a roll call. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 501 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to civil law. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pepin?
Aye.
Representative Murray?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Beard?
Aye.
Representative Green is excused. Representative Hancock?
Aye.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative McFarland?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Sanders?
Aye.
Representative Scalzi?
No.
Representative Simon?
No.
Representative Erdahl? Representative Winkler?
No.
Representative Murray?
No. There being seven ayes and six nays, the motion does prevail and the amendment is adopted. The bill is passed as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And sent to civil law. Thank you. Okay, Representative Lencheski, you're up next.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 502. Do we know where it's going to go, supposed to go?
Madam Chair, probably taxes.
Taxes, okay.
Refer it and move 502 to pass and be referred to taxes.
Okay, Representative Nelson, moves House File 502 be recommended pass and be referred to taxes to your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for scheduling this. I really appreciate it, and I want to thank your staff for assisting me and getting the paperwork to you. And I do have an amendment that was done at the last minute this morning because I was trying to call the twins and hadn't heard back from them, and so I made a decision. I hope it's in your packet.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'll move the A1 amendment to the bill.
Okay. Representative Nelson moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author likes. Any questions or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. amendment does pass. To your bill.
Thank you, Chair Pepin. House Bill 502, what I'm trying to do is, in my opinion, clean up and strengthen the protection of the taxpayers of Hennepin County in the stadium bill that passed. Some of you were here then, some of you weren't. If you weren't here, it was sort of a long, drawn-out battle. I was on the losing side. This is not doing it. The Twin Stadium is built. I'm sure you've all seen it. But what I'm trying to do is protect the people of Hennepin County who are currently paying an expanded sales tax, and to address some of the issues that I thought were not addressed in the bill. And so what this bill is doing is it's capping the amount of revenue that can be collected for the sales tax that all of us who live in Hennepin County are paying. We pay it every day. I know that folks who don't live in Hennepin may feel like they pay it too occasionally when they come into Hennepin County 3 or 5 days a year. But for those of us who reside, which is about a quarter of the legislature, we pay this tax every day. Every time we buy toothpaste, every time we purchase anything, we're paying an increased sales tax for the Twin Stadium. So what I'm trying to do here is cap the amount of revenue that's needed for the stadium. In the bill, and I, you know, this is how things work around here. Sometimes people put things in to fund things, to sweeten the pot, to get votes. So the Twin Stadium bill had some proposals to pay for libraries and pay for youth sports. And I think there wasn't many people who would argue that that wasn't to get the votes to get it across the finish line. Those of us who reside in Hennepin County are paying for a increased sales tax, our residents, for things that we would never permit in state law. We have no county option sales taxes that were not passed by a vote of the people of the county, except for this one. Cook County, for example, has a local option sales tax that went to referendum. Their voters approved it. So in general, we look at city and county local option sales taxes. They have to get approved by the voters, and they have to have permitted uses. This is a sales tax arguably for the stadium, but oh, on the side here, we're paying for some other things that are really worthy things, libraries and youth sports. What I'm attempting to do in this bill is not stop the revenue that's going to those, but to cap it. There's an escalator in law right now that allows for those entities to receive additional revenues. And then probably of a bigger concern here is there's an unspecified dollar amount as to how much tax will be lifted out of the people of Hennepin County to fund the Twin Stadium. There's no cap on how much money can be raised and what it can be used for. So what I'm really trying to do in this bill is cap the amount that the Twin Stadium bill allowed to put in to put into a capital reserve account. And I think, you know, I thought about just eliminating the reserve completely and saying, look, you know, if it was to build a stadium, we don't need a stadium plus a reserve for a stadium. But I think good management of a facility, and I think Hennepin County commissioners are managing the facility well, requires some reserve or some unforeseen something. But in law, there's no limit to this. So in effect, you could sort of game the tax if you were of people of, you know, ill will here. And I don't think our Hennepin County commissioners are that, but this tax goes on for decades, and we don't know who will be representing the Hennepin County Board at all times, but you can continually offload costs to do things for the stadium and keep collecting into the reserve. So even with my amendment, which tightens this, you could still game the tax a little bit if you want to. If you keep spending down the reserve and then refilling it, you keep having money to do things. And, you know, in the most egregious example, you could imagine how you could pay for a whole new Twin Stadium. As, you know, we're watching the Target facility come forward, hey, we need a redo. You know, the domes caved in. You know, these things age, and they need redos. And when we all were voting on that Twins Stadium, there was no contemplation that the people of Hennepin County should possibly continue to do all the upgrades or even replace a stadium over time. And I don't think it was intentional, but the bill that passed basically allows that to happen. If you had, let's say the tax was for the Metrodome, right now that tax could put a new roof on it. So I tried to pick an amount. I did call the Twins representative this morning, and I'm sure they're going to testify. And I just picked, Madam Chair, 5% of the $400 million facility, so I picked a $20 million amount that you can have a reserve of. In law, I think currently in the reserve they have about $1 million. But I think the taxpayers of this county deserve to know that someday, some way, they're going to stop paying this tax. And I know that advocates of the stadium will say that, well, you know, that is in law. I mean, you can only do it for libraries and youth sports, which, again, is unrelated to this Twin Stadium. And you can only do minimal reserves, but it isn't in law. There is no date for this to end, and you can continually to do things with the reserve fund. So I'm trying, and I hope you can support protecting the people of Hennepin County who are going to and are building the rest of the state a Twin Stadium. But I think, you know, Hennepin residents have the right to hear from the legislature that someday their children or grandchildren will stop paying this tax, and this tax will expire. So that's the gist of the bill, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. And as being a member who was here for that vote and who does represent Hennepin County taxpayers, I appreciate you for bringing this forward. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Lencheski. I must commend you for looking out for the hardworking taxpayers of Hennepin County and realizing that there is a limit to what you can put on burden-wise to them. And I like to see legislation that does have logic and reason, that there is an ending to the amount of money you can throw into local government slush funds. And so I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I think at this time maybe we can take testimony. Commissioner McLaughlin, did you want to speak? And please state your name and who you're with for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Peter McLaughlin from the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners. I appreciate the chance to testify. I want to just give you a little perspective from Hennepin County's position. The library hours and the youth sports as permitted expenditures were in the county's official ballpark proposal from day one. They weren't a late add-on to get votes. They were in our proposal from day one. The first official resolution that we passed had the ballpark, for the ballpark, had library hours and youth sports in it. So the idea was to provide a broader benefit to the community, and this was a potential means of doing that. So it was included in the legislation. It was a part of the negotiations. It was included in the information that we presented to the public at the public hearings that we conducted prior to voting on the ballpark tax. So it's a part of the deal. And so in my view, this undercuts the integrity of the representations that were made to the taxpayers when we passed the tax by changing some of the provisions here. Here's how it works. We essentially provided, with the tax at 0.15 cents, 3 cents on a $20 purchase, we provided 130% coverage for principal and interest payments on the debt. So we had a cushion of 30% on the first year of revenues. We did that so that we could get the best possible interest rate. We got a highly rated bond issue. We got great interest rate. So the fact is, a surplus was anticipated. 30% surplus was built into the tax at 0.15%. That 130% coverage worked. We were highly rated. There were the three rating agencies gave us a AAA, a AA plus, and a AA on the first series of bonds that were issued for this, and we got a blended rate of about 4% on those bonds, which was great back in 2007 when the debt was issued. So it worked. We saved taxpayers' money. If you want to protect the taxpayers, you make sure you've got good reserves and you manage those reserves. And so we got arguably the best possible interest rate you could get. These are not backed by the full faith and credit of Hennepin County. So we're getting AAA, AA plus, and AA without the full faith and credit of the county being exercised. So we think we got the taxpayers a pretty good deal. After paying the principal and interest each year that's due on the bonds, we could spend up to $4 million, and it was statutorily capped, for two very specific purposes named in the law, youth sports and library hour expansion. Money in excess of that $4 million could be used to retire the bonds early, and we, in fact, have done that. We have retired $5.7 million worth of bonds that we were going to be paying interest on till the year 2037. Those have been retired. So we're not going to be paying interest on that $5.7 million worth of debt because we retired them early. I think we've demonstrated that, in fact, we believe in paying off the debt early, and we're going to continue to do that. What we've done on library hours, in the first phase, 13 libraries in Hennepin County, 9 in the suburbs, 4 in the city of Minneapolis, are now open on Sundays. They weren't open on Sundays before, those 13 libraries. The second phase, Hennepin County's Minneapolis Central Library is now open on Mondays, and we have expanded hours in Maple Grove and Plymouth in those two libraries. So the public is getting services, expanded library services, just as the law provided. It was a part of the agreement. It was a part of our proposal. On youth sports, we've provided $6.7 million in grants. We contracted with the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission to administer those funds for us. We thought that was the most cost-effective way to do it. They had done it before. We didn't really have the grant administration capacity for this kind of grant. And for $65,000 a year, we got them to administer the grant. So we think we've been good stewards of the taxpayers' money in that regard. We think that youth sports facilities are something that were neglected, grossly neglected, and we think that this is a good way to fight obesity, to fight, give kids a safe place to be, as we're trying to fight juvenile crime and other difficulties that young people are having. We think this is an important way to respond. There's also an enormous demand for these grants. We've put the proposals out there, and cities and park systems and others have come forward. Nonprofit organizations have come forward. They've brought an enormous amount of match money to go with it. And so we have built or have helped to build an enormous amount of expansion. We've also responded to some of the changes in demographics. I mean, there are kids now who want soccer facilities that weren't built in the 50s and the 60s, and we're doing that. Brooklyn Park's a good example. A baseball field was converted to a soccer field there. In my district, a tennis court is being converted to a soccer field because the tennis court wasn't being used. That's what the kids want to play. That's what they need. And I've been in touch with folks in the community about that. In addition, I would note that the Twins were obligated to provide $250,000 per year over and above what they had been contributing for community youth sports, and they have done just that. In fact, in 2010, they contributed $425,000 over the baseline contribution that they had been making in the past. So they far exceeded, almost doubled the incremental contribution that they were to make. So the specific provisions of the bill: one, it takes away the inflationary growth in the amount that can be used for these purposes. And that was a negotiated number. The original number was 3%. I was in the room when the negotiations occurred at the last minute to get it down to 1.5%. That was explicitly, there were two provisions or two elements of that. One, they didn't want to have a floating interest rate at the time, the negotiators. They wanted to have a specific number so that if inflation started going out of control into high numbers again, there wouldn't be an ability to capture that additional growth. So there was a specific number put in. And that number was reduced from 3% down to 1.5% so that it was below the current rate of inflation at that time and below the rate that inflation had been growing in past years. So that's where the 1.5% came. It was a part of the negotiated agreement. It was part of what was presented to the taxpayers of Hennepin County when this provision was put in place. And so to change it, I think, undercuts the integrity of the agreement that was reached with the legislature and the community at that time. Beyond that, the Twins contribution of $250,000 a year in net increase in contribution. That had an inflation factor built into it as well, but that was the consumer price index, or 2.5%. So we'd be kind of moving away. They're stuck with a higher rate of inflation, and now this is the inflation on this side is going to be done away with for purposes that are very positive. Finally, the cap on the amount of money that is kept in the reserve. As I've indicated to you, we have actually retired $5.7 million worth of debt early, that debt that was going to run all the way to 2037. We are committed to continuing to do that. We have a AAA credit rating. We have managed large sums of money in the past, and we get a AAA credit rating because we take a belt and suspenders approach at Hennepin County. And that is, we make sure we're conservative in how we manage funds when it has to do with bonds. And so we do maintain healthy reserves to make sure that the funds are available and that our reputation in the credit markets will continue to warrant a AAA credit rating, which we have from all three rating agencies, which I think is important to protect the taxpayers. So that's why we oppose this bill. We don't think the state should be micromanaging this process. We think that we've been good stewards of the taxpayers' funds, and we've kept the agreement that was made with the taxpayers of Hennepin County and with the legislature when the bill was passed. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to speak.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner McLaughlin. I was just curious, intrigued by something you said. You talked about this being an agreement with the taxpayers, and that intrigued me a little bit because I was here when we voted on that, and I remember getting hundreds, if not thousands, of emails on one side or the other, as I'm sure you did too, but I don't recall one single email from anybody saying that they felt that the ballpark tax, either in support or against, I don't think people knew, I guess is my point, about the fee, and I don't think they certainly knew about the automatic inflator. I don't remember, maybe Representative Lencheski, maybe you had a different experience, but I don't recall once out of my hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails, I don't think that there was any awareness from the public based on what I got that there was even a fee for the library in there. I'm not suggesting that libraries aren't good. I'm in the Friends of the Rogers Library, which isn't one of the libraries, by the way, that got increased hours, I might point out. But I don't recall any this discussion at all from any of the emails that I got, and maybe Representative Lencheski could comment on that as well.
Well, and Madam Chair, I recall as it went through local government, there was a little bit of discussion about that provision. I agree with you that I think as legislators voted for these items, it was sort of like, do you want a stadium or not, and are you willing to take away the people of Hennepin County's right to vote on it? That was, sort of the big thing there, and we can all go back and pull out the votes, but the fact is a bunch of our colleagues decided that our people in Hennepin shouldn't have a right to vote on that, and so that's water, that's past us. I guess what I'm trying to say in here is, we have right now in this bill the ability of a county to use a sales tax for general purposes. For libraries, not even just for capital, for operating the library, as was stated, longer hours, that we don't let any county do anything like that anywhere. And we have one county that's got a local option sales tax, and they had to have a vote of the people to get that kind of treatment. And I'm not repealing that, okay? I'm not trying to repeal that. What I'm trying to say is let's not have an escalator in that piece. So what the bill, to be clear, is I'm trying to cap the growth for youth sports and library, not repeal their funding. So they still get the funding, they just don't get an escalator of 1.5% so that they can continue to do this. And it's even questionable if you read the language of the law if they can even do that in law. So I'm trying to make it clear, no escalator. I heard Commissioner McLaughlin say, the library and youth sports were part of the deal going forward. That may be. We all know as legislators that we don't have to stick to what somebody did before us. We have the right as legislators to change laws. And, we have the situation in the state of Minnesota where local option sales taxes, we generally make people, we allow the residents of those communities to have a vote on that. And we severely limit the purpose for what they're used for. And we don't let people use them for operating costs of whatever it is they're raising the tax for. So there's, a lot of tax policy in there that I think is questionable. But I think, what I would like members to know is that even with my bill, there's some ability to sort of game the termination of the tax. you know, even with my bill, even tightening it, you can still, and I'm not saying that this county board would ever want to do that, but you could. And the fact remains that there is no legal limit in current law on how much money the county can put into the reserve fund. None. There is no legal limit in the law. There is no cap on the reserve. And what I think the folks of Hennepin deserve, and Chair Pepin, you represent them, as do I, as does Commissioner McLaughlin. We all represent the people of Hennepin. Apart from me, apart for you, apart for Commissioner McLaughlin, we have different constituents. I do think all of our constituents have would want to hear that there's some assurance in Minnesota law that someday that tax will turn off. Now, I think we know, you know, does it mean it's never going to turn off? Probably not. But you can understand how, you know, the concern would be from residents. People will ask us, you know, when does that tax click off? Answer, don't know. We have the highest sales tax in the state of Minnesota. We have what everyone else has. Then we all got the sales legacy amendment for the arts, and I voted against that too. I think sales taxes aren't the way to go. We have the transit tax. We have this tax. And then we have, you know, the city of Minneapolis and the city of Bloomington and other cities have other entertainment and admissions taxes. There's a lot going on in the tax burden. But, you know, I just do want to respond about, you know, there is the concern, I understand, from the county about keeping the deal. This does not undo that deal. It just stops the escalator that is in there, and it caps the tax. So it requires it to terminate someday, some way. It caps the amount of reserve that can keep putting money in for the twins to continue to do improvements. The bonds, you know, what they were sold at and how they'll be paid back are not going to be affected by this. In fact, if anything, it'll make the AAA even better because it'll force the defeasing of the bonds even faster. It'll shut the debt for the people of Hennepin off quicker. And, you know, I must just say, and I know the twins representatives are in the room, but to say, you know, that the twins would be stuck, I mean, you know, I think we all know who got the best deal in the bill. And the twins are getting, courtesy of the people of Hennepin County for decades, public taxpayer subsidy. And so I it's hard to view that the twins are getting stuck here. And I just hope members can think about, you know, the people of Hennepin just want to know that there's some way in law that this tax will ever turn off. And in current law, there is not.
Madam Chair,
Mr. McLaughlin.
Whether you got emails or not, I don't know. Every time I talked about the ballpark tax as the initiator of this idea of using it for library hours and new sports facilities, I talked about it. And I can't control what the press prints. So we put it out every time we talked about it, I guarantee you that. And there were people who communicated with me who were very appreciative of the fact, both before and certainly since, as we've been building, helping to build youth sports facilities all over Hennepin County. And so the notion that this is somehow was somehow unknown, you know, I don't take much responsibility for that. We did as much as we could to publicize it. It was here in the debate. It was an explicit part of the discussions. And, in fact, this is an attempt by changing the eliminating the 1.5% growth each year in the possible uses of the funds. That is changing the deal. And I think that's bad for relationship between government and the taxpayers. And I think it's a bad way to go.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And being a resident of Ramsey County, it's kind of interesting to watch this. I think that I remember I was here as well with you on the local government committee, Representative Lincheski, when we did the deal. And I guess I never really thought at the time about how big these reserves could possibly get. It just I don't recall that discussion at all. Can somebody say what the reserves are now? If you want to limit them at $20 million, what are they currently?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner McLaughlin.
They are approximately, there's about $6 million for the payment of the functions that the ballpark funds can be used for, which is maintenance of the ballpark. We provide, these funds provide about $1.1 million a year in maintenance. The twins provide about $900,000 a year in maintenance costs. There is money for the staffing of the Minnesota Ballpark Authority, which was created by the legislature to administer this. And then there is money that's been set aside for the grants for 2012 so that the cash is available on a timely basis for the grants in 2012. In addition to that, there's approximately $10 million in general reserves that are been accumulated so far. And we have, as I indicated to you, already defeased $5.7 million worth of bonds. There's no reason to think that we wouldn't defease additional bonds, and that I frankly think it is for the legislature to be micromanaging and picking out, you know, the specific dollar amounts that can be kept in reserves. I think that for a county that's actually shown that it can handle these funds and has a AAA credit to show for it, something the state didn't have for some parts of this past decade, I would point out, from all three rating agencies, I think that it's a mistake for the legislature to get into that level of detail until you can actually identify a significant problem, and I don't think there's been a significant problem.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's the long answer, and then the short answer is what? How much is in the reserves?
I said 10 plus 6.
10 plus. 6. 10 plus the 6?
Yep.
So it's 16 then?
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to, I guess, separate out the two provisions. And just so I understand, Commissioner, is there, how do you anticipate this tax terminating, or does it not, in your mind?
Madam Chair,
Commissioner McLaughlin.
What I would anticipate is that there's a 30-year agreement, as I understand it, to provide for contributions to the maintenance of the ball field. That's the $1.1 million that this tax provides for that. The Twins provide $900,000 annually for that purpose. That's going to run for 30 years. So we would need to have enough money to pay for that, for the costs of the Minnesota Ballpark Authority, the office, the staff there. So that money, that would run for 30 years. That's the length of this. It would be my hope, and this bill takes it away, as I understand the bill, that the youth sports and library hours would also continue to be fundable at $4 million per year through that 30-year period. But my understanding of my reading of the bill says that that's eliminated with the provisions that are being proposed by Representative Lencheski. And then we would pay off the bonds, and we would want to pay them off as quickly as we could with the funds that are available. And that's what we've done. We've refinanced various bonds that Hennepin County has held. And it's in our interest, in taxpayers' interest, to get these bonds paid off as quickly as we can. And I would anticipate that would happen.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative McLaughlin, is there some mechanism that terminates the tax after that 30-year period has ended, or is this in perpetuity unless somebody takes action?
Commissioner McLaughlin.
I do not know I don't know the answer to that. And frankly, this bill was scheduled after the close of business on Friday. Yesterday was a holiday, and I couldn't get to our lawyers fast enough to get an answer to that. We can get back to that. So, we don't have any problems here. I mean, the idea is we pay the bonds off and live up to the obligations under the contracts that have been signed, and then we should be done. That's my understanding of what the circumstances are. But there are, we've seen what's happened when there are maintenance costs that arise here, and we need to make sure that that maintenance is taken care of, or you're going to have a problem at the end of the 30 years.
Well,
Representative Winkler.
I guess, Madam Chair, my comment on the bill is I do think it's reasonable for taxpayers to expect that there's some automatic trigger for terminating the tax after the obligations to the ballpark are met. I don't know if that exists or not, and I don't know if Representative Lencheski's bill is the best way to do that or not. It says here that when the bonds are defeased or redeemed, the tax shall terminate, but I presume they could refinance into perpetuity if they wanted to and continue to do that. I'm not saying that you would. I'm just saying that it could be done that way. I don't know. This section on page 2 confuses me about where we are and what we're doing. And then on, the 1.5% annually, it seems to me that if this lasts for 30 years, $4 million in 30 years isn't going to be very much. And this, the 1.5% isn't even an inflationary increase. And so I don't necessarily see the case for that, but I do understand the case for having some assurance that the tax terminates when the obligations are met. So it does, it leaves me in a quandary on this bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, we're having to look at that sort of the end game on this and report back. But and I appreciate your comments about the 1.5%.
Yeah. Representative O'Driscoll.
Pass.
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure who could answer this. The library funds, does that have an impact on maintenance of effort with library so that when this expired, that then the county or whoever's paying for it at that time would have to maintain?
Mr. McLaughlin?
Madam Chair, my understanding is it does not.
Representative Lencheski?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Quam. Yeah, I agree, it does not. I think the thing to think about it, and I think Representative Quam, for those of us who live in the county, on top of what already exists in law as it relates to maintenance of effort, our constituents are having to pay an increased sales tax every day to fund libraries that they, you know, may never use. You know, most of us live in communities that have our library systems, and this tax is creating, you know, moving money around. And we have, in Hennepin County, a lot of folks don't know this, but there's 47 cities. So people think of it as sort of Minneapolis and a couple cities. Nope, 47. And, you know, generally, kind of, you know, a lot of the folks who are representing those other 47 cities understand that it's moving a lot of money from their communities into Minneapolis. And so we have issues with as it relates to fairness there. But that's, you know, I guess for the sake of this bill, that's neither here nor there. You know, Representative Winkler was talking about, you know, could we divide kind of the youth, sports, and library thing from the revenue pile. And the youth, sports, and library piece, you know, it's not even clear to me that, that the law, as you read it, and I think people need to keep reading it at page 2, was it ever intended that youth and library could even go into this reserve? That's a question. Not clear. I'm not trying to limit the funding. I'm just trying to remove the escalator. But even if we said, well, we don't want to touch that. Let's just. I think the big buck question here is this reserve for the twins. And I think, you know, you heard Commissioner McLaughlin testify that, you know, I just added a cap that's higher than they've already got. So I'm saying you can keep going. So you can keep, you know, putting a little more in here to run the facility. But at the same time, you know, we're asking, you know, on a hope and a prayer and a faith that future county commissioners, because I don't think Representative McLaughlin's going to become a county board in 30 years, we're asking that future county commissioners will not be tempted when there are other needs for the ballpark authority. And right now, with no cap, none, zero, no cap, you can completely game the system because there's no guarantee that the tax will ever terminate. So what this says is the ballpark authority will get what it needs to keep going. It'll meet the needs of the twins. It'll raise the reserve higher than they're reserving right now, and they can continue to deplete that every year and refill it if they want. But even under my amendment, they could just keep refilling 20, spend it, keep doing that. So they can do the maintenance of managing a large facility that they should do. But at some point, after you're hitting that $20 million, you have to defease the bonds and turn the tax off. And I think it's just a fair request that the people of Hennepin County know that that tax will come to an end. I mean, this is the sales tax increase on the people of Hennepin County.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner McLaughlin.
I'm not sure if that's actually accurate. Upon the redemption or defeasance of the bonds and the establishment of reserves adequate to meet such future obligations, the tax shall terminate. So I think it's a fair question, but I don't think it's not clear to me that the last three lines of the bill, of the law, existing law, don't take care of it. And so I think we need to get some better information about that. Well, and frankly, I'm not an attorney, and I wasn't able to get to our folks to answer that. And as to the money being, you know, moved all around Hennepin County, I would note again that 9 of the 13 libraries that are open on Sunday, and I understand yours wasn't open on Sundays, we can't open them all. We cannot open them all on Sunday. But we did spread it around geographically so that there was a benefit and access. The goal here was access to libraries on Sundays because that's how many people live their lives. That's the best day they can go because they work 5-6 days a week. That's the best day that they can go to the library. So we have opened 13 libraries, 9 in the suburbs. 9 in the suburbs out of the 13. The youth sports grants have been allocated across the county. Across the county. And so there's no this specter somehow that Minneapolis is getting all the money is really an unfair characterization of what's happened so far.
Representative Lynchesky, and then I have a comment too.
Well, thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, maybe what I'm saying is unfair, and you know, it certainly wouldn't be the first time. I mean, I'm trying to net whether it's any one of those cities in the 47 cities in the county to make sure that they're going to have protection, that the sales tax is going to get cut and go away. And number 4 on page 2, members, for on lines 2.9 and 2.10, it's crystal clear that the county, under the current use of the tax, can maintain a reserve. No cap, no limit. All I'm trying to do is say at a certain price, I mean, pick, if it's 20, isn't good enough, 25, 30. I mean, something where can you maintain a reserve of $250 million? I mean, this tax would certainly produce that over time. It certainly would. And there's no ordering that you have to defease bonds ahead of reserves. You can reserve and then defease, reserve and then defease. And if you defease $5, $6, $7 million a year, as has been stated, there has been some going on, that's going to take a long time to defease all the bonds. So it's sort of a security system for the people in Hennepin County that after some level of reasonable reserve for the Twins to manage the ballpark authority and take care of the facility and youth sports and libraries, that we'll see this thing come to an end.
Mr. My comment,
Mr. McLaughlin.
Number one, we don't know. I mean, there isn't. We don't know what those last three lines mean. That they're pretty straightforward in my mind, but I think we ought to check on that. But number two, you know, I stand for election. All the other members of the county board stand for election, and why wouldn't we defease bonds? We've defeased some already. We're going to continue to defease the bonds, and would be my likely projection and prediction on that. And you know, the legislature can choose to micromanage if it wants, but there's a lot of micromanagement. There's a lot of other bonds that are out there across this state, and it seems to me that we have thus far handled the law responsibly on behalf of the taxpayers of Hennepin County, and there's no reason to think we wouldn't continue to do that.
Well, Commissioner McLaughlin, the chair of this committee doesn't like it when people go off tangent and ask questions that are somewhat unrelated to this bill. Having said that, I will allow myself to go off tangent just
nice
a little
to be
bit.
Chairman, Madam Chair.
That's right. I just wanted to point out to you that the library in question that I am on the Friends of, the library hours are 10 to 2 on Saturday, no hours on Sunday. And so I would invite you out to our library to look at the library and the 29 parking spaces at the library as you can make future considerations. Having said that, I will move on to Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sort of in a quandary about this because Representative Lynchesky and I fought valiantly on this at that one local government committee that went till midnight. I think we did a few amendments. And I think there's some good points about the reserve that you raised, but on the other hand, the park is built and libraries are being supported. Commissioner McLaughlin, this is a question to you. I mean, if this bill were to be passed, would there be an impact on, you know, the funding of these libraries? It seems like there's money in there already, but I'm interested in what would be a practical effect in terms of what citizens of Hennepin County are enjoying, arguably for a good purpose, libraries.
Well, the growth.
What would be
to
the impact,
Madam Chair,
Mr. McLaughlin,
Representative Hornstein? The growth could maybe go to that library that the chair's talking about. But now that the growth will be gone and wouldn't be available for that purpose, all right, but I'm being a little facetious. What I am saying though is that money would be gone. That money would not be available for library hour expansion or investment in youth sports facilities. It would go to defease the bond. That's the policy choice. And my position is, why should we be changing the terms of the agreement that was made by the legislature and within Hennepin County when the tax is paid? So it'd be just less money. Whatever the 1.3%, 1.5% growth rate would produce, that would no longer be available for youth sports or library hours. That's the purpose.
To a follow-up, Representative Hornstein?
But you have this cap of 1.5%. How much of that is being? I mean, are you using all of what's allowed for this fund right now?
Commissioner McLaughlin.
Madam Chair, we have tried to manage this carefully. On the youth sports side, we said we were not going to pay for operating costs because we thought that was there would be lots of applications for that, frankly, and we thought that would be something that was there, and once you start funding somebody for operating costs, it gets hard to take it away. And we thought that there was a big pent-up need for capital, and so we've been allocating about as much as we could. I mean, we're trying to manage it. They come in chunks. The applications come for a specific dollar amount, so we don't hit, you know, $2 million for youth sports right on the button each year. But that's what we're managing to, is that $2 million a year number. The other side, on the library hours, we actually have been spending a little bit slower than the $2 million a year, because we thought that there would be growth, and the growth would be in excess of the $1.5 million. So we didn't want to open a library on a Sunday and then 5 years from now have to close it because there isn't sufficient funds to keep providing it open. So we actually had two different theories of how to do this, and the library hours is obviously about an operating cost. So we're managing that in a different way. But we have 13 libraries open every Sunday, and then we've opened the 3 hours, additional hours, in the three other libraries that we talked about, two of which are in the suburbs as well.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner McLaughlin, I just want to make sure I've got the right use of the money. The youth sports fund, the St. Anthony baseball field, is that renovated through that fund?
It was. Ms.
Madam Chair, McLaughlin.
Representative Erdahl, yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Commissioner McLaughlin, well then, I will attest to a very good use of those dollars. I have personal knowledge of that baseball field, and it is open Sundays, by the way. But I do want to be clear then, I think you maybe already said this, but if this bill passed, then what would be the impact on funds like that for baseball fields?
Commissioner McLaughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl. The impact would be that there would be 1.5, the growth factor, the 1.5% growth factor would be eliminated. And so there would be fewer funds available for that purpose over time. For those purposes, both the youth sports and library.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Winkler.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I have a question for Representative Lincheski. I don't feel like I have enough information about how these bonds, or how the tax would terminate, how the kind of end of the life cycle would occur. And I wonder if we could wait on deciding on what to do with this bill until we get some more detailed information about this. You might even have a chance to get feedback on your $20 million before sending it to taxes.
Representative Lincheski?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Winkler. You know, obviously that's the Chair's call to do what she wishes with this bill as far as a motion. I mean, you know, I'll just express the frustration sitting here. I'm tempted to ask somebody, because I'm not a member of this committee, to delete the section that I'm changing on youth sports and libraries, because that's really not the point of this bill. I mean, that's a nice little side note, and people can talk about if they should have an automatic escalator or not. But the big deal in here is the reserve that can continually be replenished with no end in sight. Okay, so if you look at the twins tax that the people of Hennepin are paying, you know, think about how much that tax is going to generate over the life of the tax, which, of course, we don't even know when that is. But let's just say 30 years. You know, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, and we're focused on $4 million for libraries and youth sports. That's not the big part of the thing. I put that in there because I believe it's wrong that we have any local option sales taxes that, one, aren't voted on by the people, but, two, pay for operating costs, which is what that provision does. We don't let any of the rest of you don't live in Hennepin County, your cities do not have a sales tax to pay for operating costs at libraries. And in this economy, you know, we just don't have the money to have all. I'm not arguing that the money should be redistributed so more libraries can be open longer. I think we just plain old can't afford it. And if the people of Hennepin disagree, they should get to vote on a new sales tax with their approval to keep libraries and new sports running or whatever they want to do with it. But, you know, all of that didn't happen. It's really a side note to the stadium tax. And so, you know, Madam Chair, I'm open to your suggestion on this. I feel members are focused on the St. Anthony Ballpark or the library hours, and that's a very small part of what the Twins tax is doing in Hennepin County that our constituents are paying increased sales taxes on every day for at least 30 years.
Madam Chair.
Second. Representative Lencheski, and hold off just a second, Representative Winkler. I understand what you're saying. My preference is for the bill to go forward as it is, because that is an important piece of it in my mind. I know it's not the most important piece, but my preference would be to go forward as it is and then perhaps look at some of the issues. It does have another stop in taxes. I'm more inclined to support it if it does have that language in. Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm just to be clear, what I'm concerned about is not clearly understanding the trade-offs in the status quo versus the new language on the reserve and the termination of the tax. So because I don't have enough understanding of what the differences are between what exists and what would be changed under this bill, and we don't have the information today, that's my concern about voting on it.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Lencheski.
The Twins representatives are here. I'm not sure whether they're not testifying. You know, they could probably answer your question. They're in the room.
It's fine by me. We only have a couple minutes left of our official meeting time, but if maybe someone from the Twins wanted to come and answer some questions. No, nobody wants to talk. Go figure. Well, is there anybody else that needs to have a minute in the audience to address anything in this bill? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lencheski.
I don't know, obviously, what your schedule is like, but, you know, I'm happy to come back to your next committee so we can continue and maybe get more detailed information. I think with or without this, without my bill, even with more information, there's still no termination of the tax unless we take legislative action to ensure it ends.
Well, you know, you're the author of the bill, so I'll let you do what you want, but I will tell you that our committee is really ramping up with a lot of bills, and I would prefer not to take another. This has gone much longer than I've thought, and so my preference would be to renew the motion, take a vote, and then any work that needs to be done could be taken in taxes, because I just don't know if we're going to have time going forward to come back. Okay. Representative Hornstein? Did you make the motion? Representative Nelson, would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I've been given some advice that it could go right to the floor, but I think with all the questions that are going on here, I would like to renew my motion to send it to taxes, and so that more discussion can be had. And there is tax impact here, and I think it needs to be discussed. And so that's my motion. I move to remove my motion to pass this and send it to taxes.
Okay, Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 502 be recommended to pass as amended. No, it wasn't amended, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Was amended. As amended and be referred to taxes. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay.
No.
Motion prevails and it is recommended to pass and is recommended and moved to taxes. With that, we will adjourn until tomorrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair.